I was recently out for a socially distant walk with a girlfriend I hadn't seen in 3 months. And after discussing how life has changed since COVID, how our kids are doing with it, the whole mask debate that we're seeing online, the polarizing political debates, race relations, a whole bunch of other things people are juggling while trying to live in an odd new normal. Oh, it's just been a weird couple of months. Well, it turned out that both of us and several other of my friends have found ourselves in really complicated interactions, both online and in person. And my friend who I was walking with said she'd been using her peacemaker skills when interactions get complicated. And she said it really helped her mental health and it really helped the conversations be more positive and constructive. And her statement got me thinking about how right now in this time we all might use some peacemaker skills. And so I reached out to the peacemakers. So right now I've got Chelsea Ottman-Rack and Keila McCracken there with me via Zoom. Both are social emotional learning specialists with Peacemaker Resources. They're here to help us in terms of navigating complicated and emotional conversations. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah. So to the outsiders who aren't in the studio, I'm Zooming with you guys, and it's so fun to see you in person. There's so many people I haven't seen in real life, and you're two of them. So good to see you both. Thank you for joining me today. So before we start talking about communication tools, could you tell our listeners about Peacemaker Resources? What does Peacemaker Resources do around Northern Minnesota?
Good morning, Katie. Thank you so much for having us this morning.
Thanks, Chelsea.
So Peacemaker Resources is an organization here in Bemidji. We've been here for over 20 years. One of the main things that we do with our work is we work in the schools teaching SEL, which stands for Social Emotional Learning. This past school year, we were honored to be in every public school here in Bemidji, K through third grade. So if you have a student who is in kindergarten through third grade this past year, they had a peacemaker come to their classroom. So that was really exciting for us. The first time that we were in K through third here in Bemidji. We also travel to teach our classes. We've been as far as Deer River, up to Kellier, in Black Duck, as well as Cass Lake. And we also work with Head Start here in Bemidji and in other communities. So teaching young children is one of the biggest parts of our work. We also have several other programs working with youth, such as our STAR Camp, which has been a program that's been around for a long time. And with STAR Camp, we have fifth and sixth grade students come together from different communities, learning social emotional skills that then they take back to their school setting and they teach to their peers. So we're kind of teaching them to be leaders within their school communities, which has been a really rewarding program for us. We also have a cultural responsiveness team that hosts a monthly meeting every third Tuesday. We have our Building the Bridge meeting. For the past few months, this has been held virtually online, where we bring different people together to talk about issues our community is facing, and we try to build some understanding and compassion, specifically between our Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities, so that we can move together forward in a united way. The other two things that I'll mention are we do a lot of professional development and trainings for educators as well as organizations to promote healthier relationships, more collaboration, and hopefully promote the well-being of everyone in those settings. And then the last one I'll mention is a program that I am the coordinator of, which is called the Step Up Program, and that is specifically to empower and work with our child care professionals in the greater community to support their important work caring for our children, as well as teach them some skills to use social emotional learning in their programs. So I'm just so honored to work for this amazing organization. I feel very proud of the work that we're doing in our community.
Yeah, you should. In fact, in the email, I can't remember, last night, yesterday at some point, I said, you guys are actually superheroes wandering around our town, helping us be better as a whole. I wonder if you could talk about how do these strategies really induce healthier workplaces and schools and enrich our families. Keila, looks like you're going to take this one.
Yeah. So I often think of, you know, what is something that's super relatable for all of us as humans. And oftentimes I think we can relate to having conversations where we get flustered or having conversations where we notice that we are getting kind of emotional and our heart is racing. We might feel that our breath is getting more shallow instead of breathing deeper. And we might say something that later on we know that we misstepped and we feel bad for what we said and we feel like we caused more disconnect than we did connection. So at Peacemakers, we're really focusing on skills that help us to navigate those conversations where we can focus more on the connection. So we are encouraging and teaching healthy communication skills that really help us be honest and authentic, so that not only are we able to give honest yeses or nos and honest answers, but we're able to build connections and spaces where other people feel like they can authentically come and share their true selves as well. And a lot of this work has to do with equally learning about ourselves and our own emotions and our own needs, while also equally learning about the person that we're communicating with and trying to understand their emotions and their needs. So we're doing a lot of skill-based practices that do take a lot of practice, that take time, but they help us have more opportunities to build more connections with the people in our lives.
Yeah, it does take practice. I'm reading a book right now. It's called What We Say Matters. And it's got some activities in there. And I'm finding myself, I really have to practice going through the motions and even verbally saying things out loud to get in this new frame of thinking. And on that note, I wondered, on your website, there are two words that popped out at me that I think they may not be part of people's regular vernacular: nonviolent communication and deep communication. Could you talk a little bit about those and how they affect our lives?
Yeah, so for nonviolent communication, it's really focusing on creating a connection with someone else. And I mean, a connection can be as simple as you're at the gas station and you're just talking to the next person over at the pump, or you're having a conversation with one of your dearest friends or family members, and it's a really intense conversation, whatever topic is that you're having. But in all of our interactions, trying to figure out ways that we can communicate with less judgment, not only of ourselves, of what we're feeling and what we're thinking, but also less judgment on the other person, and trying to increase the compassion and the empathy while we listen. So we like to think of it as, for nonviolent communication, when you're having a conversation or interaction, what we're trying to do is just hold space for someone else and try to understand, where are you coming from? Like, I'm going to put myself aside just for a little bit because I want to understand where you're coming from. I want to understand their emotions, not their issues. So I don't want to have a conversation on something that instantly kind of puts us at odds. Instead, I want to focus on what we have in common. I want to understand their experience and their understanding, and also pay attention to what their needs are. Maybe they have a need that they just want to be heard in that moment, or they have a need for being valued. And so creating that space often meets that need. And in this type of communication, it's really important to also pay attention to what's going on with us. So we want to observe how we are feeling, hold our own empathic space of being, trying to reduce our own judgments against ourselves and our own thoughts, and increase our own empathy. So really, nonviolent communication and deep communication is about opening up a space where we can be honest and authentic, and try to figure out where our commonalities lie and grow from there.
Yeah. That's Keila McCracken. She is a social emotional learning specialist with Peacemaker Resources in Bemidji. And I'm talking with her and Chelsea Ottman Rock. Earlier, I had mentioned that I've gone on a walk with a girlfriend, and we were talking about having these complicated conversations about a litany of issues right now that we're dealing with in public. And I think some families, I only have one child and we get along very well. So There's literally no drama. However, my best friend has three boys, and she said, I don't know if they're just sick of each other or if we're all sick of each other, but people are maybe a little more on edge than they have been just because our realities have changed so much. So I wondered, what specific skills or tools could you bring to light that would be helpful for people to keep in mind, whether they're having a conversation where they're opposing viewpoints or just a conversation with people who are at their wits' end with reality?
I think that as now there are these heightened feelings, right? This heightened sense of anxiety, this heightened sense of the unknown, right? We don't have a clear vision of the future, and we need to hold that close and remember that and give ourselves more space, more time, more patience because of that. So I think giving ourselves grace and remembering that there's so much going on right now that we really need, we just really need to be kinder to ourselves. We're used to just, you know, pushing ourselves and doing everything that we can and being very busy. But I think at this time, because of all the factors happening in our world, it's extra important to slow down, to give ourselves space to just be, to just process everything that's going on. And as parents, to give our children that space to process, because I think sometimes children show their anxiety, show their fears in different ways, not in expressing clearly with words their feelings or their anxiety, right? So I think to try and keep that in mind when you're seeing more behaviors from your children or even within yourself or other family members, that there are just so many more charged emotions in our world that affect how we are able to regulate ourselves, how we're able to handle different situations. So I think that that's a good first step, is to slow down and give yourself and your loved ones a little bit more space. I'll also share with specifically thinking about families during this time. We have a coworker who shared last week a strategy that her family has done, which is taking time when everyone's feeling good, right? So before the outburst, before the frustration, before the anxiety. So when everybody's calm and thinking clearly, taking time to set aside or to make a game plan for what happens when we feel these big emotions. What can we do to help ourselves when we're feeling really frustrated with each other, when we're feeling mad, when we're feeling sad, when we're feeling worried, so that we have some strategies ready to use when we're feeling those big emotions? Because we know that when we feel big emotions, it affects our ability to think clearly. So if I'm already frustrated, it will be harder for me to come up with an action that's going to help me calm down. But if I have some game plan ready, things that I know help me to calm down, then it's easier for me to go to that when I'm feeling those big emotions. So examples that work for me, I love to make art. If I come home and I have that, you know, frustrated face, my husband gets out the shoebox of art supplies and we sit and we just color, and that's a way for me to calm down, to regulate. And then I'm more able to talk with my husband and my family members about maybe what's going on with me. Whereas if I come in the door and I'm frustrated, it probably is going to spread to the rest of my family. So being really proactive about making a plan and then following that, right? Using those tools when you need them. Other examples of things that work for folks that I know are taking a walk, getting outside, drinking water, taking a shower, anything to do with water, I've heard has is really helpful to a lot of folks. So I think it's a great idea to plan some things that will help you in advance of those big emotions so that you have them kind of in your pocket. And we also heard recently a Brené Brown podcast where she shared about making a family plan. So what do we do when everybody's in a bad place? You know, what strategies can we use as a family? So not only just figuring out what works for individuals in your family, but also talking about what do we do when we're all just over it. Right. You know, maybe that's leaving the house in whatever chaos it's in and going to the park or going to the beach or just getting outside. So being proactive, making a plan.
Yeah. I love that idea of taking time when the heat isn't so high. Sometimes, historically, I'm speaking from experience. I'm not afraid to be honest online or on the air. Sometimes after things get heated, there's a conversation that happens right after about how could we have changed that. But I think I like your advice of taking time out totally away from that situation so that when you come into a moment like that again, you've got some tools in your pocket that were set there in a moment of peace as opposed to being set there when your anxiety is high and going up and down after kind of a complicated conversation or something like that. I also love just leaving the house with your family when you're feeling overwhelmed. Just let's get out of here.
Well, and it's great when if the whole plan family or whoever is with you in the house is a part of this plan and this strategy, it invites everyone to have a role and a place in it. And so you might notice the youngest one in the household is the one that's saying, hey, we need to take some breaths right now. And it's fantastic to see how the responsibility is shared about a family regulation plan. And so it's great to see our little ones stepping up as leaders in those ways.
Yeah. And as parents, when we do that, we're modeling to them that it's totally healthy to have conversations about how to get out of conversations that aren't making us happy or moments that aren't making us happy. So those are tools they can use forever and ever for the rest of their lives. You teach communication strategies to both kids and adults. Who's harder to train? Keila?
Well, first of all, the kids have way better outfits. And I'm such a fan of their fashion sense.
Yes.
Oh, this is a good one. They both have their really fun aspects that you kind of get to witness as a teacher, and they both have kind of their challenges. I think for kids, I mean, their brains are so moldable at that age, and they're so accepting and so willing. They're craving connection, so they're excited about these tools. What kind of makes us a little like, huh, this is a little challenging, we're not really sure, is that with kids, we're not sure how much of what we're teaching is really sticking, because a lot of these skills and practices, they don't just perfectly work out the same day or the next day, but they take time. So sometimes we don't know, you know, where along the line that, you know, they're really holding on to these and using them. We often think of when we are in the classroom, every action that you are doing is watering seeds. So what kind of seeds do you want to water? So that's something that we think about. Chelsea, what do you think? What do you think of this one?
Well, I agree that with children, they're just so open to new ideas and experiences and excited and bring that enthusiasm. But you don't really know what's sticking. We're only with our students for half an hour one time a week. So we're so hopeful that these skills will stick with them. And we do hear oftentimes from teachers and parents about students using their skills that we've taught them. So that's really encouraging. But they have so much life ahead of them, right? Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that the skills will stick, but sometimes it can be challenging. Whereas with adults, the wonderful thing is they are usually in situations that they can put these skills to work right away and really hone those skills and use them in their real lives. Another great thing about working with adults is, you know, really using their wisdom and their life experiences to make the skills really resonate with who they are and in what specific situations they are needing to use them. So I feel like the real life application and that immediacy can be really rewarding. We see the skills being used. We hear feedback from them that they're working or that, you know, they're helpful. And that's so rewarding to receive that feedback instantly. challenging for adults, of course, is we've had many, many years of doing things in a certain way, and it is hard to relearn some things. Even for myself, I have to be constantly aware of my patterns and my way of reacting to different situations to make sure that it aligns with my values and with my goals for how I want to be. But it's definitely not something that naturally happens. It's something that I have to be very aware of. So I feel like with children, hopefully, if those skills are set and then encouraged, those skills will become more natural. That way of being will become more natural. Whereas I feel like as myself, as an adult, it takes a lot more effort. It takes that constant kind of checking in. Is this who I want to be? Is this how I want to be reacting? What is the outcome of my way of dealing with whatever conflict is in front of me right now? So, but I really appreciate working with both with children and adults.
Yeah. Any extra comments on that, Keila? You're nodding your head. And
yes. Oh, so many good things. Well, lately we've been having a lot of trainings where we are either the trainer or the trainee just with physical distancing. And it's really, I think what's really empowering about working specifically with adults is when they are unlearning and relearning a practice and they have the experience of interactions that don't go the way that they want to, and there's that frustration and they're trying to learn this new skill and they're practicing and practicing and practicing. And then once they have kind of the first conversation or communication interaction where not only they are using the skill, but it goes successfully and there's this alternative outcome and a completely different feeling. They feel more connected. Their body felt less stress while in the conversation. They felt like there's less conflict and divide. It's really cool to be able to witness those like celebrations and the excitement that is there through using these skills. So it's really fun to see adults that are willing to come to the table open and willing to learn and adapt and practice new ways of communicating that help them feel better and help them also communicate better with the people around them. So I just like the celebration part too with the adults.
Yeah. That's Keila McCracken from Peacemaker Resources. We're talking about conversations and conflict and how we get through those complicated and uncomfortable moments. I know people whose friendships have really been tested recently, specifically due to a breakdown in dialogue around race relations, online, really. And Peacemaker Resources is part of a really important program in our community called Truth and Reconciliation. It's an initiative building bridges. And I know you work a lot with cultural responsiveness and historical trauma. How can we do better in terms of weighty conversations around things like race or Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter, those conversations that often put people on edge online? And you're not really, you don't oftentimes, from what I've seen, the people don't even know each other that end up being on my Facebook page in arguments. I know that they don't know each other because I've met one person in Colorado and the other person lives in California. They don't even know each other and they're fighting. And it's like, what the heck? How can we do better in those kinds of conversations?
So I have taken a training that's really, really been helpful for me in engaging in conversations with those, different viewpoints, we'll say, rather than opposing. Mm-hmm. And that was a workshop called What the White Ally Toolkit by Dr. David Compt. And in that workshop, I learned some really helpful things to keep in mind when you're engaging in those conversations. I will say that online, it's a different setting, right? In person, these conversations have a lot more traction, have a lot more capability to create change. I think that engaging in these dialogues online. I personally don't go there because I feel like it's an uphill battle that causes so much more frustration than actual change. So for me personally, I prefer to exclusively engage in real life because I just don't find the online platform to be a place where change happens from those back and forth spats.
Right.
But I will say what I have learned that I think could be helpful to folks is, first of all, when you're engaging in a conversation with someone who has a different perspective or a different belief than you, to make sure that your goal is not to change their mind in that conversation. So oftentimes when we engage in these conversations, we're going in to change that person's mind, right? We're going to convince them that how they have been thinking for their whole lives is wrong and that they need to agree with us, right? And that is not realistic. So to bring that goal back from that overwhelmingly broad and impossible goal, what I encourage folks to do is, rather than thinking you're going to change anyone's mind with that conversation, have your goal be, in this conversation, I'm going to create a connection. I'm going to find some common ground with this person so that we can build a foundation of trust and so that we can set ourselves up to have future conversations. So there's a great quote, who I can't remember who it's by, but it's that change happens at the speed of trust. We cannot change without trusting one another. And from one conversation, it's very unlikely that you will build enough trust to change anything. So if we're engaging in these conversations with the intention to create change, we need to broaden our view, right? That this is going to be many, many, many conversations. This will need a relationship in order to create that change. And to have a relationship, you need to find common ground to build upon that foundation. And then you need to find ways that you can connect well with that person while also trying to expand their perspective. So that's something that I always remind myself of, is to keep my focus just on the moment with that person, trying to understand better their perspective, and then trying to express myself in a way that better allows them to understand my perspective. And another strategy that I learned from Dr. Compt was, instead of using data points in our conversation, which is very common where we go, you know, sharing an article that you read or a percentage point that you saw, and then it's kind of an argument or a debate of data. So rather than going to data, what Dr. Comp recommends is to utilize your own personal experiences, because personal experiences, that's not something that really can be debated, right? I can't debate someone's personal experience. And when I hear someone else's personal experience, it helps me to understand where they're coming from. And when I can understand where they're coming from, that allows me to find some common ground with them. So for example, your statement of the Black Lives Matter versus the All Lives Matter, you know, I would probably at first start with trying to find a connection. Yeah, you're right. All lives should matter. I'm completely in agreement with that, right? But then I could expand sharing that friends that I have that live here in our community don't feel safe in their community because of the color of their skin. Friends that I have who've lived here their entire lives don't feel safe in their neighborhoods, feel followed when they go to the store, worry about the safety of their children when they're out in their community or even when they're at school. And so to me, hearing those stories from my friends who live in the same community as I do, but don't feel safe, don't feel like they are made to feel like they belong, that shows me that according to the society, according to the community we live in, that doesn't feel like all lives matter. That feels like their lives matter less. And until I hear from those friends and from Indigenous community members that they feel safe and that they feel like they have equal opportunities, I don't think that we can say a simple statement such as all lives matter, because that's not what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. So starting with that common ground of yes, all lives should matter. But until we're there, we can't say that, because then that takes away our responsibility to do the important work to lift up our Black, Indigenous, Latino, and people of color in our community, to make sure that they feel safe, that they feel welcome, that they have every opportunity to follow their dreams.
Yeah. On that note, when I was on your website, I saw information about an online course about racialized trauma. It looks like it started last Monday with an introduction, and it is coming up following Mondays. Could you talk a little bit about that? And can people still get involved in this online experience?
Yeah. So last week we had our very first community conversation session. That's what we're calling it. We've had a lot of folks in the community reach out to us wanting opportunities to engage with these topics in the past month since the George Floyd's egregious murder. And so this is one thing that we came up with as a response to the community kind of reaching to us for a call to action. So it is a five series course that Resma Menakem has created. He's offering it for free. So the whole opportunity is completely free. So what folks would need to do is go either onto our Facebook page, which is the Bemidji Truth and Reconciliation page, or to our website, which is buildthebridgebemidji.org. And there you can find all the information for how to register for Menakem's course. And then the meetings will be every Monday throughout July. We had our first one last week, as you mentioned. We have four more coming up every Monday in the month of July, starting at 1 p.m. and just going to about 2 p.m. It's hard to end right at 2 p.m., but approximately an hour conversation where we just invite community members to share what resonated with them in the particular topic that we viewed that week. To share what stuck out to them, what feels important. We are putting this on not as experts, but rather as folks. We ourselves are learning, and so we have invited community members to join and to kind of all be on equal footing of sharing how the content resonates with us. So I'll share a little bit about what the course is. It's called Racialized Trauma Course, and Resma Menakem is an author, healer, and trauma specialist. He lives in the Twin Cities, and he talks about how decontextualized trauma that we all have in our bodies, and how that influences how we feel, how we act, how we think, how we respond, influences our personalities. And that trauma, that decontextualized trauma, can be an individual, from an individual experience. It can be from a group experience. It can be intergenerational, coming from our ancestors. So really unpacking how this trauma manifests itself in our lives, and how we can help each other to work through this trauma individually as well as collectively. So anyone who wants to engage on any level is welcome to join. We have the platform that we use is Zoom. So if you'd like, you can have your video on. If you feel more comfortable with your video off, that's fine. Folks are invited to share as they feel comfortable. If folks just want to come to listen, that's perfectly fine. If you want to just check it out for one time, and it's not necessary that you came, that you come for the previous sessions. So any engagement is welcome. We're hoping just to spread more learning opportunities, and maybe you just want to listen and then engage in a conversation with someone that you feel more comfortable with, that provides you that feeling of safety. So this course is really hopefully an accessible point for anyone to come and join the conversation or just to listen.
Yeah. Before we started, well, right when COVID started, I had a girlfriend stop by to drop off some soup at my house. And she said, I think we're all going to come out of this so much better. I mean, this is in March. But we could never have had any idea of how deep things were going to get as far as not just personally, but interpersonally, culturally, socially. This is a great opportunity for people to just consider where they're at and how that is affecting them and their communities. So thanks for organizing it. Thanks for all that you guys do in the community and beyond. Is there any last thoughts you might have to share about successful communications in difficult situations?
Well, we're communicating every day. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, I like to keep in mind that, you know, when I am communicating with someone, what type of communication do I want to continue after this conversation? So if this is a family member, I want to have a lifelong healthy relationship and friendship and open communication with this human. So what can I say now and how can I keep that at the core of what I'm saying and what I'm doing? And also take deep breaths. If you're ever feeling overwhelmed, just take a moment. It's okay. Take it slowly. You're doing good.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you both so much for taking time today to talk. Thanks for everything you're doing to make the world a better and brighter place. I appreciate it. And I think a lot of other people do too. So thanks again.
Thank you, Katie. You make the world a brighter place for sure.
Oh, you're a doll. Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye.
You too. I should note, if you want more information about what Peacemaker Resources is doing or how you can get involved with some of the programs that they are putting on in our area, go to peacemakerresources.org. Again, thanks to Chelsea Ottman-Rack and Keila McCracken for their time this morning.